everybody, and welcome to the John Likes Movies podcast. I am John Gilpatrick, your host, and I am joined today by a freelance writer. He is the editor-in-chief of ImpassionedCinema.com. He is a member of the Boston Online Film Critics Association, and his name is Max Koval. Max, how you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Thank you for joining me. And what we're here to talk about is you made a trip to Toronto, north of the border, recently.
Yeah.
Max went to, this is the 40th year for TIFF, right?
Yeah, it is.
How was that? Was it different being like kind of a milestone anniversary?
Well, they didn't really play up that, the pomp and circumstance too much, but there was enough things there that made it feel like it was a 40th anniversary.
Mm-hmm. Cool. And how many days were you at the festival for?
I believe I was there for 6 days.
Okay. So, and it runs for about 10, I think, right?
Yeah, 10, 11 days.
Nice. So we're going to talk all about the Toronto International Film Festival. We are going to talk about some of the, I guess, nuts and bolts of being there day to day and what it's like to stand in line, which I know probably sounds fascinating, but I'm really curious about it. We're going to talk about some of the other things you did in Toronto, some of the cool people you met, and then at the end we're going to touch on some of the, I guess, more intriguing movies that you saw there. All three I'm really excited to see when they make it to you know, suburban southeastern Pennsylvania. But definitely, so let's get started. The first question I have is maybe not the first question that a lot of other people would have, but as a writer who sort of struggles to squeeze in writing and watching movies and all this other stuff and trying to be as productive as possible, I'm curious, like, when you slept?
Well, luckily, I wasn't covering the festival for, like, a truly specific website this year.
Right.
While I was going to do some work from Pop Optic, I did a review or two for them.
Mm-hmm.
Really, I was on my own schedule since I really didn't connect with anybody for a full gig. So it was more about enjoying the festival. I'm not sure how many more reviews I'll put up from TIFF, but... Mm-hmm. I think I have some time, given many of the movies don't even have release dates yet.
Yeah, absolutely. Even some of the reviews that you did post, I think, are coming out next year, so you can squeeze in another viewing or two before. I think that's probably like an interesting point is like, I think a lot of people probably go to a festival like this thinking like, all right, I'm going to have to squeeze in as many movies as I can. Like, I'm going to see 5 movies all day long and I'm just going to stand in line. And that's probably not like a really feasible plan, is it?
Well, actually, I'd just like to say in general that if you are getting paid to do it, and I don't know how our contemporaries find the time to sleep and write. Most of them write during the films that they're watching. Never mind find time to eat, but I wouldn't cover the festival really if I wasn't getting paid. It's really hectic. And one of the days of the festival, my wife who joined me, we saw 4 films. Mm-hmm. And it's really difficult to see 4 films as a public patron because they play in different venues for the public.
Yeah.
When the press all get to go into 1 theater and they just hang in there all day. So it's not really like traveling around the city as well.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. So as a member of the public, like, how far apart are a lot of the main theaters?
Well, it depends, really. I mean, some of them are 5 minutes from each other. Some of them could be as far as a 20-minute walk or a 50-minute walk. It's really like you need to learn either the subway system or utilize the taxis in some of these cases because the theaters can be really spread out.
Yeah. Did you find that, like, you've been there twice now, is Toronto, like, an easy city to kind of get around?
Yeah, it's not too bad. While we still haven't ventured on the subway system yet, which we probably should have, because we saw one film in this theater called the Bloor Theater, and wow, that was pretty darn far. But other than that, we didn't mind too much where everything was.
Cool. Now, what about you said that, you know, you went with your wife, which is awesome. I would love to go to the Toronto International Film Festival with my wife one day, if she's listening, just putting that out there. but, you know, one of the appeals to me of going to this festival in particular would be kind of an opportunity to meet a lot of people who I've only ever interacted with on Twitter, yourself included, until now. But, like, what kind of stuff did you do with, like, other bloggers and stuff?
Well, you see, when you are a writer like you and I are, it's fun meeting these people. Like you previously mentioned, it's a great opportunity to network and socialize. Just if you're covering the festival alone, not only that, but if you are there by yourself covering the festival, which many of us are, sometimes it could be some much needed social hour to get away from some of these films and see some people. I mean, I talked to people who came up from Jamaica this year, and last year I talked to people who were from Australia. So yeah, it was a really nice thing to be able to meet these people, and I'd like to think that there might be lifelong friends now. So
that's awesome. That makes me feel really bad for not like making the drive from Pennsylvania. Like, that's a really poor excuse.
Well, it's not too bad. I mean, we fly out of Logan Airport, so, I mean, we don't like driving either, but...
Oh, you flew in?
Yeah.
How long of a drive would it be?
I think more like 8 or 9 hours.
Oh, yeah, okay. I guess we'd probably have to fly, too.
Well, I know some people who do take the train in or something like that, but the plane from Logan is just an hour and a half, so...
Yeah, that's pretty pleasant.
Yeah.
One of the things that I'm really curious to hear from you about is like the whole process for purchasing tickets, because I feel like I'm on Twitter like, you know, a certain day, and it happens to be the day that everyone's trying to buy tickets, and it's just like, you know, more chaotic than, you know, like an election day or something, where everyone's frustrated and it's like, oh my gosh, my computer crashed, like what do I do? And kind of, it sounds really nerve-wracking trying to get tickets to the movies you really want to see. So take me through that whole thing. Like, you know, you've decided you've purchased a pass, and they give you a date, right? Which is like sort of your window for buying tickets.
Right. Like, there's certainly different ways to do it. I'm not sure if what you're seeing is actually the public sale day or the window day. Mm-hmm. But yeah, if you purchase flex tickets, which are normally purchased like a month or two right before the festival starts, mm-hmm, you can get packages of 10, 20, 30 films.
Yeah.
It's generally a better deal if you're going to see any more than 4 films. And then you get a window of time within a 4-day period before the public tickets go on sale. So you're able to satisfy your package requirements. Mm-hmm. And then once that is done, there's the general on sale that goes up on the public sale date. And that is probably the thing that you're seeing, which is can be a cluster.
Yeah.
Which is because basically you hit a button to get onto the website, and then you're stuck in a virtual queue, and you have to wait for your number to be picked, and then you get to pick out some tickets.
Mm-hmm.
It can be stressful.
Were you able to get tickets to, like, most or all the films that you wanted to see? Was there anything that you got shut out of?
I was extremely lucky this year compared to last year. And while I had the third day for ticket selection out of 4, mm-hmm, I got a lot of good films. And then when public tickets started, I was, like, number 60 in line. So I was able to get everything that I needed to fill in. Like, tickets that were previously off sale to me, they had allocated more for the public sale.
Oh, that's awesome.
So while it was disappointing to see Where to Invade Next would be sold out, or The Lobster, once the public tickets went on sale, I was lucky enough to get tickets to those events.
That's great. Is there a lot, like, once you're on the ground, is there a lot of, like, flexibility with being able to change your schedule around, or are you pretty locked into the tickets you have?
When you have flex tickets, you can change them. Uh-huh. But by the time you get there, so many films have been picked over. It's like, I don't know what you're really going to want to change for. What happens is every morning at 7 a.m., they release tickets to that day's film. So if you're willing to get up really early to the box office and stand in line, yeah, you might get lucky and be able to exchange your tickets, but I'd say you're pretty locked in.
Yeah. I always hear like a lot of stories of people that go to Sundance and they'll say that that's kind of like a film festival that is driven by word of mouth. And I've always kind of been curious to see if like other film festivals operate that way, but it sounds like TIFF's probably not the right one if that's the sort of thing you're looking for.
Right, because I mean, there's certainly films that I missed that have good word of mouth now after the festival. Mustang is the French entry, and I was like, oh, that looks kind of interesting, but I'll go see the Michael Moore documentary instead. And now I'm like, oh man, I must have missed something really good. So,
yeah, but with the lineup as like deep as TIFF's, like there's, I would imagine, no way to really catch everything that's good. You sort of have to like be one of those people that's lucky enough to attend pretty much every major festival to kind of be able to pick and choose that way.
Right. I mean, even the top critics in the industry, while they've seen stuff at Sundance and New York Film Festival, they still, and even Telluride, they still hadn't seen everything at TIFF. So
yeah,
it's just, it's crazy. There's almost 300 films that they have.
It's sort of just like, I mean, I go through this like, whenever I'm planning to just go to the movies in my hometown, where I think like, oh, should I go see this or should I go see that? Like, oh, well, maybe this will be playing next week, or maybe I'll get a screening of this like sometime. And it's, I agonize over it. I couldn't even imagine. I'd be such a nervous wreck trying to pick out movies to go see at a festival like this.
Well, you said it. It's like some of the stuff I really wanted to see, like say The Martian, because it comes out October 2nd.
Yeah.
But luckily, it recently screened for critics, so I was able to see it maybe like a week and a half after Toronto, so yeah, I didn't have to wait that long.
That
so.
Worked out. Good choice.
Yeah.
So. I was surprised. I don't want to spend too much time on it, but I was very pleasantly surprised that The Martian was as well-reviewed as it was at Toronto, because I was a little nervous. I read the book, and I really enjoyed the book, and wasn't sure how it would translate with Ridley Scott's track record of late, but it seems like it was one of the bigger success stories at the festival.
Yeah, I'm very happy that it got good word of mouth too. I mean, I read the book and enjoyed it myself. So
yeah. So we talked a little bit about the lines for purchasing tickets online. How about the lines like when you actually get there? Like, are they really crazy? Like, how long do you have to spend waiting in line before you go into a theater? And then, once you get into the theater, like, do you have the ability to choose seats, or do they sort of just usher you in and you sit next to whoever's in front of you?
Well, the lines are a necessary evil at TIFF. In order to secure the best seats, you easily have to arrive an hour or more before a screening. While TIFF insists that you'll be able to get into the theater as long as you are there 15 minutes before showtime, that's not really ideal. So it becomes apparent very quickly that not only do you have to include travel time between the film venues, but you also have to include line waiting, never mind trying to eat something during all these films. So, I mean, the lines can be really long, and you sit and wait, and if you want a decent seat. And sometimes the talent shows up to even the second day screening, so you'll want close front row seats so your camera can capture them.
Yeah.
And so it really is a game to try to get in line, and line etiquette itself isn't always the best, because sometimes you'll hear people talking about spoilers for movies that they've seen, or,
oh, it's terrible.
Yeah.
You mentioned some of the talent. Like, did you see who did you see while you were there?
We saw Tom Hiddleston, because he has the new film. I saw The Light coming out. We saw Jean Desjardins, because he has a new French film coming out.
Yeah.
We actually got into the live read for The Princess Bride. So
we saw
a bunch of celebrities in that.
How was that?
That was a lot of fun. I mean, some people would say, how could it be fun sitting watching actors read from a script for
an hour? Oh, I'd love it.
It was really enjoyable.
Yeah, those things have always sort of intrigued me. The live reads, they've been doing them for a number of years now. And Jason Reitman sort of organizes it, doesn't he?
Yeah, he organizes it. He did Boogie Nights and American Beauty before that.
Yeah. Yeah, The Princess Bride, I would love him. I adore that.
And, yeah, my wife and I really enjoy that film too, so.
Yeah, cool. I guess we can transition into talking about the movies. We've got a few we're going to run down. If you want to check out, Max has, you know, on his Letterboxd profile, you can check out everything that he saw, and he's got reviews up for some of the movies. We're going to talk pretty in-depth on three of them, and I guess let's start with the film that opened the festival, which was Jean-Marc Vallée's Demolition. And one of the things I was really curious about regarding this film was the fact that Fox Searchlight's releasing it, and not long before the festival, you know, a lot of people were kind of anticipating it might be like a big Oscar player. And before the festival started, the studio announced that it was going to be released in April of next year. So no Oscars this year for Demolition, but I'm wondering if you think the film could have competed in any categories, or if you think it could compete for any categories next year. A lot of people talked about Jake Gyllenhaal's performance, that he was pretty, you know, as he has been of late, pretty dynamic, but maybe the film was not up to that level. So what did you think about it?
Well, you've heard mostly correct.
Okay.
Yeah, it was interesting seeing that they were going to wait till April, considering Jean-Marc Vallée's previous two films, Dallas Buyers Club and Wild, if not won Oscars for Dallas Buyers Club, but were also included in the ceremony for Wild. So you would think that, well, he has a pedigree, he has a name, and he typically gets nominated. So how bad could it be?
Mm-hmm.
And then when you say to yourself how bad it can be, you think to last year's TIFF opener, The Judge.
Oh, yes, you're right.
Robert Downey Jr., and that was really bad. So
that's not a great spot to be in, right?
I guess not. I mean, the two that I've seen leave something to be desired. Certainly, Demolition is better than The Judge.
Okay, that's something. So, it's a low bar to clear, but at least it cleared that.
Right. It's an interesting story because Jake Gyllenhaal is his wife has just been killed in a car accident.
Okay.
And he's kind of numb to it all. And his father-in-law tells him that in order to maybe overcome his depression or something, he has to deconstruct his marriage. So he takes that pretty literally.
And so does the film.
Yeah. Starts deconstructing his life.
Okay, that's interesting. And do you know who wrote Demolition?
Not offhand.
I was just curious because, and we can talk about this a little bit, but like Jean-Marc Vallée is a filmmaker who I just like don't have a real handle on kind of what his MO is. And I was really surprisingly into Wild last year. And I couldn't get into Dallas Buyers Club very much. And I sort of thought maybe that was something to do with the screenwriting, because
I know he adapted. I don't know if he particularly, but I know the writing for Wild was adapted from.
Yeah, that was Nick Hornby. He did the adaptation, so it was sort of one of the things I thought, like, okay, well, maybe like in the hands of the right screenwriter, he can do something like pretty special. What was your take on him going into this film?
I don't know. I mean, certainly he hasn't really put himself into a box of what to expect from him. I mean, certainly some directors, this might be an unfortunate reference, but like Martin Scorsese, you can say is a gangster.
Yeah.
Director.
Sure. No, I mean, I think that's fair. Like you can expect something like that from him, even if he doesn't do it all the time, but.
Right. So I don't know. I mean, Vallée really hasn't put himself into a bracket. I mean, certainly another reason why this film was selected as the first night is because he's a Canadian director.
Yeah.
And of course, TIFF wants to promote their own talent.
That's something that they do pretty regularly, right? It's usually a Canadian filmmaker.
I don't know if it's regularly. I mean, like last year it wasn't, but certainly this ended up being fortunate for them. They had big stars like Jake Gyllenhaal and Naomi Watts, so it fit the bill.
Yeah. How was I guess start with Jake Gyllenhaal, but I'm curious about Naomi Watts too. Like, what role did she play?
All right, let's start with Naomi Watts then. She plays a tech support person, actually.
Okay, the other line. Not what I expected you to say, but that's okay.
Yeah, because like Jake Gyllenhaal is at the hospital at the beginning of the movie, and he's trying to get some M&Ms out of a vending machine, and the vending machine won't vend the M&Ms. So he sends the vending company a letter saying that he's very angry, and he just becomes obsessed with these M&Ms and this vending machine. So eventually she comes into the picture.
Okay, that's interesting. And did she, like, does she, I don't want to put the entire movie into terms of Oscar, but is it sort of like a leading performance, or is she just sort of like a, you know, in support of Gyllenhaal? Is it his show mostly?
Yeah, it's his show.
Yeah, and like, how would you compare his performance here to some of the other ones he's given recently? You know, I thought he was really great in Southpaw, and then I thought he was fantastic in Nightcrawler last year. That was one of my favorite movies of the year.
I might be terrible, but I don't really care for Jake Gyllenhaal, actually.
Oh, not terrible. It's okay.
So I did not see Nightcrawler or Southpaw, but I think he's very good in this. From my understanding, he elevates films that are otherwise subpar with his performances. That's at least what I've heard of Southpaw. Mm-hmm. And
I think it
continues here, that he rises above the writing and really makes the film memorable when it wouldn't be memorable otherwise.
Okay. So now back to one of the things that I led with, do you think that Fox Searchlight sort of missed an opportunity by pushing this movie to next year? Do you think that next year it could, like, do you think it might be a sleeper financial hit, or could it come back around at the end of the year for any Oscars, or is it sort of just, this is a movie we're going to release and we'll see what happens?
It's a very weird movie. I think, like, April sounds like they're trying to bury it, honestly.
Yeah, it kind of does to me, too.
I don't know how if they don't know how to market it or something. I think that trying to get Jake Gyllenhaal some kind of nomination for even a Golden Globe or something along the way would be at least something to bring attention to this film, because otherwise it's not going to play big numbers.
Yeah. Would you say it's a comedy or is it a drama?
It has its laughs, but I think it's more of a drama.
It's probably more of a drama, but if you laughed like 3 times, then the Golden Globes would classify it as a comedy.
Yeah, sure. I could put it in comedy then.
Yeah, remember those like 3 times you laughed during my week with Marilyn? Yeah, that was hilarious. That was a comedy.
Yeah, I remember that one.
The tourist.
Jeez. Yeah, but that's what I'm seeing. The low-hanging fruit that is the Golden Globes. I mean, certainly the movie could make waves there, but...
Yeah, I mean, I guess maybe it's a case of it has enough on its plate this year and it just didn't kind of want to deal with... They didn't want to give it, like, the short end of the stick. I know it's releasing Brooklyn later this year, and you saw that and you were a bigger fan of Brooklyn.
Certainly. I mean, but they could put Jake into his own category of leading actor or something, see what happens there. And in Brooklyn, there's not really a male performance that they have to campaign. So
yeah, that's a good point. So that's Demolition. You can see it probably sometime in, you know, late spring, early summer of next year. Might be, I would guess it's probably going to be like a platform release where it'll be, you know, in New York and LA, and then it'll expand over the weeks and months, but probably not your 2017 Best Picture winner from Max's review.
No, another Naomi Watts movie, I think it's going to be very similar to, like, St. Vincent, like that same type of rollout and just kind of quiet. If you look for it, you'll see it, you might enjoy it, but...
Yeah, it'll have its fans, but it's not going to be, like, a monster hit or anything like that.
Right.
Cool. Well, moving on, one of the films I'm really excited to hear you talk about... One of the reasons why is because I don't really know anything about it, which was a deliberate choice on my part. But the movie is Anomalisa? Am I saying that right?
Yeah, that's how it's pronounced.
Yes. And it is a stop-motion animated film, correct?
Right.
And I know I'm. This is terrible. One of the directors is Charlie Kaufman, and it has a co-director, and I'm not sure of what his name is.
I believe it's Duke Johnson.
Thank you for doing my job for me. So Charlie Kaufman and Duke Johnson directed this film, and it was really it premiered at Venice, then it went to Telluride, and then it went to Toronto. And at all three festivals, it got really great word of mouth. I was really excited when I watched the Toronto lineup announcement, and they said Animalisa, new Charlie Kaufman film, and I said, the new Charlie Kaufman film? Like, I had no idea this was even in the works, but I was really psyched because he's one of my favorite filmmakers, even though he's really only directed one film before, but he's written a bunch that are really great, and so just a really interesting artist working today in film, and yeah, this one got really great reviews. It got picked up during the festival by Paramount Pictures, something I didn't really expect to happen either. It doesn't seem like a major studio film, but here we are, and I want to hear your take on Animalisa.
All right. Like you said, it's interesting that Paramount did pick it up. Certainly from what I saw and how it plays out, they're hoping that word of mouth is good on it, which apparently it is.
Yeah.
And that maybe they can get it for a screenwriting Oscar. I mean, Charlie Kaufman has received nominations for almost all of his works, with being John Malkovich, an adaptation, in Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Yeah, I think he won for Eternal Sunshine.
Yeah, it's not unreasonable to believe that he could be nominated again.
Wow, that's crazy that he's going to get, I mean, not going to get, but he might be in contention for a screenwriting nomination for this stop-motion animated film, which is so funny to me. And I believe it's like graphic nudity in it, right?
Yeah, it does.
Is it, like, animated? Correct. Is it, like, how much of the movie is animated? All of it?
All of it.
Okay, well, paint that picture in your head, listeners.
All of it is using stop-motion puppets.
Okay, cool. So what in the world is it about?
All right, so the main character you follow, and he is a inspirational speaker type deal where he has tips for office workers to improve their business. So he goes on plane trips and gives conferences. Okay. So the movie pretty much sets up like he is just in like Cincinnati, and there's nothing to do in Cincinnati, and his life is pretty unfulfilling, and all he sees is people with pretty much the same face and they sound the same. Like, that's how his life looks to him.
Okay.
So he's in the hotel and he decides that he's going to try to reconnect with a ex, and then after that he meets up with a young woman named Lisa, who actually has a different voice and different face than everybody else he's seen.
Oh, okay.
So that's basically all I want to give you without giving too much away.
A tease. No, that's cool. It's sort of the appeal with the movie, you know, the Charlie Kaufman movie. Like, I don't want to know every detail, so I'm glad that I have, like, I have a baseline of knowledge about it now, and I can discover all the surprises when it gets released. It's getting released at the end of the year, which is really, I think, a bummer for me, because I probably won't be able to see it before, you know, I have to make my, like, top 10 lists and vote in awards and all that other stuff. But, you know, who knows? Maybe we'll get lucky and I'll get to see it early. But
yeah, I would probably get a small release December 30th in, like, you imagine 10 theaters just to make the Oscar run or something like that. And maybe the end of January will get a larger push or something.
Yeah, that's usually how that sort of stuff goes. But do you think it could be like a Best Animated Feature nominee?
Maybe, but that field's very deep this year.
Yeah, it is. It could be like Animalisa versus Inside Out.
Yeah, that isn't going to work.
You never know. Is it, like, the question I had with Demolition, is it a comedy or is it a drama or is it, you know, somewhere in between?
If you've seen his works, like Adaptation and Being John Malkovich, then it's about as funny as those films. Like,
okay,
it has its moments, and it's certainly like, oh my goodness, what am I watching or what are these people doing? Then do have the moments of drama as well.
And you like the film quite a bit, right?
Yeah, I mean, maybe not shouting off rooftops like some other of our contemporaries, but I did enjoy it quite a bit. And I mean, I'm the type of audience for his films, I guess, because Eternal Sunshine is in my top five favorite films of all time. So wow. it'd be hard for me not to enjoy.
Yeah. Yeah. That's kind of how I feel too. I wouldn't say it's in my top five of all time, but it's definitely a favorite. And so is Being John Malkovich, and sort of like in some way he's writing these films for me.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I can't stand Nicolas Cage normally, but Adaptation, I love him in. So
yeah, great. Times two. Would you say that it's a movie? Like, how did it play?
It played pretty well there. I mean, people seemed happy. It didn't seem like to confuse too many people. So, I mean, it's not something that's really deep and introspective. But, like I said, it has its moments.
So it has its surprises, yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, that's Annalisa. I'm glad it got picked up. I wish it happened a few weeks earlier. I could have included it on my fall movie preview with my most anticipated movies of the rest of the year. I'm going to have to retroactively add it in somewhere because it's definitely, among those.
Well, I wanted to add one thing before we go on to our next film is that they used Kickstarter in order to get this film going.
Did they?
Yeah. You can, if you search Kickstarter, you can see the campaign and everything for it. And they said that it wouldn't have worked had they gone with a traditional system. Because even the movie, it's only voiced by three actors.
Wow.
So it's a very interesting film.
That's awesome. Good for them. And what are you allowed to say, like, what Animalisa means? Does that have, like, anything to do with the plot? Because I don't know what that is.
It has enough to do with the plot that I'll be
best. So we'll leave it there. Yeah. Perfect. So another movie I'm really excited for and I'm really excited to talk to you about is Mountains Made Apart, which is the latest from Chinese director. I'm going to say this as best I can. Jia Zhangke. And he directed, among other films, one of my favorites of 2013, which was A Touch of Sin. And he's back. This movie premiered at Cannes earlier this year, and I don't think it won any awards, but it was pretty well received by critics there. And now it played at TIFF, and it's your first Jia film, and I'm really curious to hear what you thought of it.
Yeah, like hearing the words come out of TIFF and out of Cannes was very interesting because this year there was actually a lot of directors whose films I'd never seen before.
Yeah,
on the list. So when I heard of this one, I was really intrigued. It takes place during three different time periods. In this case, 1999, 2014, and then 2025.
Cool. Okay.
So it's a movie in three parts too. Like you could separate it like Act One, Act Two, and Act Three.
Yeah. And is it like, does it follow the same characters throughout all three parts, or like characters who are related to each other, or are the stories totally separate?
The first part has its own central characters, and then the second part you follow them a little bit more, and there's offshoots of those characters that you follow.
Yeah.
And then the third sequence, you're just following the offshoots. Like, you're not following the main characters anymore.
Okay. Yeah, that's interesting. A Touch of Sin was something that played out in four parts, and they were all completely separated from each other, each part. So that was one of the reasons I was curious about this one. And can you, like, kind of cue us in on the, like, sort of how it starts, like what the first part's about, at least?
Yeah, I can do that. I mean, it's funny when you look on Wikipedia to try to get an idea of what the film's about, it's pretty much what I've already told you and nothing more. So whatever I say is going to be enlightening to somebody. So basically the film starts and you have these three, let's say, younger 20s. That's where their age group is. And you have your typical cute girl, and then you have the guy who he's the hot one with lots of money, and then you have the one who is just like more kind and giving and caring. And although they've tolerated each other all this time, the two men, they both decide they've tolerated each other enough and they want to have the woman for themselves.
Okay.
And so the first part is basically that love triangle playing out.
Okay, cool. And that's in 1999?
Yes.
Interesting. And I know from A Touch of Sin and some just hearing about some of Gia's other films, he's like a director who touches a lot on sort of like contemporary issues in China. And is that like something that plays out at all here?
Yeah, certainly. He talks about, well, a lot of these characters just have, they're inspired to go further in life and try to make a better life outside of China or make money elsewhere and stuff like that. And it's funny because actually the film opens with a Pet Shop Boys song, Go West. And it's really significant about them all just wanting to try to leave and try to make better.
That's interesting. Yeah, I feel like I don't see a lot of like Chinese cinema. And so I remember when I first heard of A Touch of Sin, I was like really curious about it because he seemed like pretty well regarded and that movie really impressed me. And so Mountains Made Apart sounds really good. And I know it has a distributor. I'm pretty sure it's Kino Lorber. And I don't know what the release date is, but I think that you probably will see it in the next like 6 months or so. It might be something that they give a limited release to this year, or else it could be one of those movies that kind of comes out in like February or March in limited release and has like a limited expansion before you, you know, inevitably catch up with it on DVD. But yeah, that's Mountains Made Apart. Do you want to touch really quickly on a couple other things? I just know that you said like there were several directors whose films you saw for the first time here.
Okay, yeah, we have time to do that.
One of them that I'm curious about is Johnny To, who came to TIFF this year with his new movie Office, and it's, I think, his first musical. Is that right?
Yeah, I believe it's his first musical, too.
It's your first Johnny To musical.
Yeah, certainly.
Maybe the world's. Pretty sure. I haven't seen all of his stuff, but I'm a big fan of his. And I got into his movies after I saw Drug War, which I also think was a 2013 film. Kind of like A Touch of Sin, which is, I guess, that was a really great year for East Asian cinema. But tell me what you thought about Office and kind of where that leaves you on Johnny To.
Okay, like, I'll start with when I looked up Johnny To after seeing Office. I don't know what I expected to see as his filmography, but it was certainly different than what Office plays like. Office is a 3D musical.
Oh, it's in 3D?
Yeah, it's in 3D.
Oh, I had no idea. That's crazy.
Yeah, and it's based off a play called Design for Living. It doesn't have anything to do with the
I just got so... I wish you could have seen the look on my face when you said it was based on Design for Living.
Yeah, I made sure to tell you it's not based on the movie.
Okay, well, yeah, a little slight disappointment, but I'm still excited for 3D musical Johnny To. Continue.
Yeah, so basically the story is about a large company that is looking to take itself public. And and you follow the different characters in the film. On one side, you have two new interns that have just joined the company. And one of them has her own secret that she is the daughter of the CEO of the company. She doesn't want anyone to know. Okay. And the other one is just a really hard worker who really wants to succeed. So you have them, and then you have the CEO has his own time, and you have these other characters who do their own things in the business, and you find out that there's a guy who's selling off some of his shares to play with the market or using the company's money, and that is the catalyst for the drama that unfolds.
What did you think about the music?
Yeah, it's very well done. I don't know if it's exactly adapted from the play and like that's the music that they used, or if they did something else. It's really interesting to see this kind of musical be put together, and it's very unique as opposed to just your everyday musical, certainly.
Yeah, so it's like it's not like you know, Broadway show tunes all the way. Is it sort of like a little bit more pop?
Yeah, it might be like a little bit more pop, but certainly they go into a dance sequence.
Nice. Okay.
It's not just them just singing statically, but It's like they are choreographed. The movie almost takes place like on a giant stage where like they move the pieces, and that's where like the 3D comes in.
Nice.
Basically to give you the depth.
Oh, cool.
Of
okay.
The stages.
That'll be fun. I'm excited to check that out. Hopefully it comes to a theater near me so I can enjoy it in every dimension possible. what was it like seeing like a 3D movie at TIFF? Was that the only one that you saw, or did you see one last year?
That was the only one that I saw. I believe The Martian played in 3D.
Yeah.
Outside of that, I'm not sure if very many others played in 3D.
Yeah. This is something like I'm curious about going forward is, are you going to have more of those, less of those, and just sort of the general 3D debate?
We could certainly spend a lot of time going into that.
That we could, and we don't have to now, because we can talk about Terrence Davies instead. And he is a filmmaker who I've only seen a couple of his movies. First one was the Rachel Weisz movie, Deep Blue Sea, that came out a couple years ago, and I was sort of like a little lukewarm on it. And I've seen some of his older stuff now. He had a film that came out that Criterion released, A Long Day Closes, and I was more involved in that than I was Deep Blue Sea. But his latest is Sunset Song, and it played at Toronto. And this was your first Terrence Davies movie, and are you going to be seeing more anytime soon?
Are they all as equally depressing?
Well, I haven't seen Sunset Song, but Deep Blue Sea will do a number on you.
Oh, all right. Then I don't know how many of these I'm going to say.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, the sum up Sunset Song, for those who don't know, it's based on a Scottish novel that they actually teach in classes, Terrence Davies told us at the Q&A afterwards. And it's basically about a young woman who has, I guess, some dream. She'd like to be a teacher, but she discovers that her true occupation will be in the home and taking care of her family, and then in general taking care of herself. And basically it just shows like her life and how she's treated and mistreated by the different men in her life.
And it sounds like it doesn't end well.
It depends like how you view an ending well. I would say that without going too far into the movie, her father is extremely misogynistic and abusive, and he could get Horror Villain of the Year award, in my opinion.
Do you think it's the sort of movie that like maybe plays better outside of a festival where you're sort of like not inundated with so many other movies and kind of like when this, I would imagine that seeing like a real like brutal sort of downer of a movie is probably not an easy thing to do in a setting like this.
No, it's probably not easy to do when it was my fourth film of the day at 9 p.m. either.
Yeah, that's fair.
I don't know who his movies play for. I don't know too many people who say to themselves, well, I feel like being depressed today.
It's a hard thing to get excited about, you know? It was just
right,
sort
like,
of like
yeah. I've never seen a Lars von Trier movie. Mm. And I know that all of his movies are very difficult to watch, depressing. And I'm just like, well, he may be an artist and people enjoy his movies, but I don't know necessarily what they enjoy about it, whether it's just the craft and the cinematography and the acting as opposed to the stories.
Well, I would say I'm a von Trier fan, and his movies are definitely depressing, but at least the ones that I enjoy, and I don't enjoy all of them, but I do enjoy some of them quite a bit. There's like a really sort of twisted sense of humor about them, kind of like Nymphomaniac had that, and Spades, and even something like Melancholia did too, which are his last two movies. But from the little I've seen of Terrence Davies, like there's no attempt to be funny, there's no reason to be funny, it's just tragedy.
Yeah, it really made me think of I shouldn't use this because it's a movie that I hate. I forget the director, but it's called
Mouchette. Yeah, that's Robert Bresson.
Yes. I didn't dig that one was almost in the same frame of like very depressive on the female lead. And
yeah, I've never seen that, but I've heard the same things. Well,
I haven't gotten rid of very many Criterions, but I sold that one on eBay
happily. I want to hear a little bit about, you know, some of the films we've talked about. I've seen other films from their directors, but the next one is a total blank slate for me, and I'm really excited to check out his next movie, and that's Yorgos Lanthimos. He's the Greek director of Dogtooth and now The Lobster.
Yeah, this was my first experience with him, mm-hmm. and I haven't seen Dogtooth or Alps either. And while I sort of know of their basis where they aren't for the faint of heart, but he has a like black comedy-esque about him, like a satire almost.
Yeah.
And certainly The Lobster plays into that as well. It's his first English language film. And you'd be surprised that he has an all-star cast. I mean,
yeah, Colin Farrell and
Rachel Weisz. And
John C. Reilly is in there, I think, right?
Yeah.
I saw Ben Whishaw in there.
Yeah, he's in there too. And the woman who's going to be in James Bond Spectra, and she was in Blue is the Warmest Color.
Lea Seydoux.
That's yeah. Right. So she was in there too. So yeah, it's a very stacked cast. And it's very interesting. Its premise is that being single is terrible. And if you are single, you have to go to this hotel. I don't know if there's many hotels or if this is the only hotel, but you have to find a mate within 45 days or you get transformed into an animal of your choice.
Oh, at least you get to choose.
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly reasons to think about what animals would be good, and that's where the movie gets its name from, because Colin Farrell decides that he would like to be a lobster if he doesn't make it.
What a weird choice.
he explains why he thinks the lobster is a incredible choice.
I hope so, but yeah, it's very high concept, and that was sort of the thing that like intrigued me, was the concept, because the filmmaker is somebody who I don't have anything to say positively or negatively about, but yeah, it's that played at Cannes, and I think it won a screenplay award there.
Yeah, I mean, it's not... what makes it so good is that it's different.
Yeah.
It's like you've seen a lot of movies where you know what's going to happen and things play by the numbers, but if you're tired of sequels and tired of just regular big studio productions...
Yeah, you can't see, but my hand is raised really high up in the air.
Then this is what you're looking for. I mean, it's very different. It's bizarre and at times. It's very graphic, but he plays with you too. It's like he'll tell you things or show you things, and you think that because he set you up before that he'll show you these things, that he's not ready to show you them later.
Yeah.
So he really plays tricks with what you're expecting.
So you were a big fan of The Lobster.
Yeah. Surprisingly, I think I found myself a big fan. Halfway through, I was like, this movie's really making me uncomfortable. But powered through it, and I really liked it.
Cool. Good. Now, we're going to wrap up in just a few minutes, but I want to just kind of get from you, like, what was the film of the festival, something that you saw that, like, you know, coming away, like, you're still thinking about, or that, like, you're just really happy to recommend to other people? Like, what would you say, like, define your TIFF experience this year?
I'm gonna set it up with a story, actually, a quick one.
Yeah, go for it.
I actually had originally thought that my movies that I had to see when I went to TIFF was going to be Trumbo and The Danish Girl, because I thought the material and pedigree and stuff like that, those movies would be the ones I need to see. And me loving the Oscars the way I do, I wanted to see an Oscar-nominated film as soon as possible and thought these would be the ticket.
Yeah.
When it didn't come together the way I wanted, I was kind of disappointed, but I picked something else out. And then I started hearing rumblings out of Telluride and Venice that Spotlight was picking up a lot of heat and people were loving it. And I said to myself, well, I have to see this movie during TIFF now. I think it's got to be making waves. And when I heard comparisons to All the President's Men, which I think is a genius film.
Yes, it is.
I was like, I need to be there. So I got my tickets to Spotlight, and I was very impressed. It was hands down the best feature I saw out of the 15 films at TIFF, and I'm excited for people to see it. It takes place right in my backyard, I guess. Rhode Island's only an hour from Boston, so I was very pleasantly surprised that it turned out well. I mean, I didn't see The Cobbler, but I'd seen that director's previous films, Win Win and The Station Agent, and I really liked those films.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that that was just a misstep, and it's not a showcasing of what he's capable of in the future, but
It's Tom McCarthy, and I didn't see The Cobbler either, but it really kind of broke my heart because I was going into, you know, that premiered at TIFF last year, I think, and I was going into it, I was sort of like, oh, cool, another Tom McCarthy movie, it's been a little while, and oh, hey, Adam Sandler, like, that could be awesome, you know, and this is going to be the new Punch-Drunk Love, which I think a lot of people sort of were
That's
hoping.
That's my favorite Adam Sandler movie.
Yeah, me too. It really just, wow, it was just savaged, a movie I haven't seen in a long time. So I'm so happy to hear that it's as good as advertised. I know, as like a journalist myself, I have a proclivity for those sort of movies, and you know, compare something to All the President's Men, and it's not gonna be hard to get me psyched for it. So, right. Spotlight.
It's not like it needs bomb explosions or machine guns or anything to make it a really solid picture. What it comes down to is these people doing tough journalism work, and they make it exciting. They make it entertaining, and it's really a power to the direction and the acting.
Yeah, and it's going to be an interesting case. You brought up, you know, its Oscar chances, and I'm very curious to see kind of where it's going to fall. I just saw, you know, today we're recording this, you know, towards the end of September, and I saw a story that said everyone is going to compete in supporting acting categories. There's no lead, so that's interesting. It's also the first... Well, I shouldn't say the first, because Nightcrawler got a nomination in the screenplay category last year, but the Open Road Pictures is distributing it, and they've never had a Best Picture nominee before, so I think a lot of people are expecting this to be its first one, so see how that plays.
It will depend on how well that they can market the film. Unfortunately, the Oscars is more like... who can get the word out of their film the best, and hopefully it doesn't get buried by this smaller distributor.
I hope I hope that's not the case. And you saw, like, IFC Films did okay with Boyhood last year in terms of nominations. It didn't really bring home much in the way of gold trophies, and maybe that's a similar fate that Spotlight will have this year. But yeah, more journalism movies, bring them on. I'll always buy a ticket, so please. cool. So that's Spotlight. How did your wife see Spotlight with you?
She did, and she really enjoyed that as well. So I think it was funny when I mentioned the slate of what we were going to see. That was one of the ones she said that she really wanted me to get tickets for.
Great.
Of course, the other one was The Dressmaker, which I just said, no, we're not getting tickets to that. But.
I heard, you know, I sort of saw, like, the first images from that movie when they were released, and I thought, like, oh, boy, I'm never going to see that. It just looks so boring. But I heard some, like, really kind of crazy things about it that, like, piqued my interest about, like, it's really kind of a genre pick, and it gets a little bloody, and it's like, kind of weird. And so, I don't know, I might end up checking that one out, even though it didn't really get the best reviews from what I saw at TIFF. But yeah, Spotlight was one that I thought maybe would win the audience award, and that ended up going to Room, which I don't think you saw, right?
No, I didn't see, but I actually saw a website did a follow-up on it and said that Spotlight was the runner-up, so...
Oh, interesting.
That surprised me.
Okay, yeah, it seemed like it was sort of like the... one of the few films at the festival that, like, no one had anything bad to say about, which, you know, is a good sign going into the fall and kind of the Oscar season. I think it's just, like, building consensus around it that, like, hey, this is really good. You need to take it seriously. And I hope that works out. I can't wait to see it. And Anything else? Any other movies that you just want to, like, briefly mention as, like, really great or, you know, something that we need to watch out for this fall?
I mean, we covered a lot of them, but yeah. I guess I'd want to give special mention to Youth, which was one of the only films in my top five that we haven't mentioned yet. And I just think that why it's not immediate that it comes to you that this is like you walk out of the theater and you think it's the best thing that you've ever seen. It sneaks up on you, and it's a very contemplative piece because it's about older gentlemen who are really reflecting on their lives and where they're headed and what they've done.
Yeah, that sounds great. I'm really excited to see that. I think that comes out in like early December, probably a limited release, and Fox Searchlight's releasing that. So I'm sure it'll be in the conversation and that we'll get a chance to see it hopefully before I have to do my, I do like my top 10 list.
It's funny though. I was talking with someone online and they were like, oh, it's nice to see Michael Caine back in the conversation. I'm like, well, Michael Caine's been around for years now and Christopher Nolan movies. He's like, oh, first time in a while for Oscars. I'm like, yeah, I guess, but
yeah, he's not somebody who's gone away.
Right.
Especially like he's playing against like Harvey Keitel, right? And I feel like we haven't talked much about Harvey Keitel in a long time.
Right. And then Jane Fonda has a very small.
Yeah. I've just heard things that like, holy cow, when Jane Fonda shows up, it's something. Some people weren't super into it, but some people were really into it.
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, I was hearing some people say it's just like rich white people problems because hey, you have these retired composer and retired filmmaker pretty much or at the end of his career, and they have the money to stay at this luxurious hotel that you'd never imagine being able to stay at, and here they are being depressed. But I don't know. I didn't see it that way.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be one that I'll check out as soon as I can. That's Youth. And I guess that's about it. For those of you listening, I'm going to have links for all of Max's TIFF reviews and to his Letterboxd profile and his Twitter profile page. You should follow him on both of those. Very bright guy, as you've heard, and knows his movies. And I guess that's about it. So thank you, Max, for joining me.
Well, thank you for having me. I enjoyed talking about TIFF. Hope we can talk again.
Yes, I would like that very much. And so thank you for listening, and we'll catch you again soon. Thanks. Bye. You got a lot tied up inside. Just won't fight. Baby, it's a grind. And this your bitter life, where nothing just won't do. The girl pleads, the woman needs a wedding ring. The boy dreams.